Welcome to SCOTUSCast, the Confrontation Clause and Forensic Lab Reports edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 23, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Bullcoming v. New Mexico. The question in this case was whether the Confrontation Clause permits the prosecution to introduce a forensic laboratory report containing a testimonial certification made for the purpose of proving a particular fact through the in-court testimony of a scientist who did not sign the certification or perform or observe the test reported in the certification. Justice Ginsburg delivered the opinion of the court, except with regard to Part 4 and Footnote 6. The court, by a vote of 5-4, held that the surrogate testimony of the sort in the immediate case does not meet the requirements of the Confrontation Clause. The accused right is to be confronted with the analyst who made the certification, unless that analyst is unavailable at trial and the accused had the opportunity pre-trial to cross-examine that particular scientist. Justice Scalia joined Justice Ginsburg's opinion in full. Justices Sotomayor and Kagan joined all of Justice Ginsburg's opinion except for Part 4. Justice Sotomayor also filed an opinion concurring in part. Justice Thomas joined all of Justice Ginsburg's opinion except for Part 4 and Footnote 6. Justice Kennedy filed a dissenting opinion, which Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Breyer and Alito joined. To discuss the case, we have Stefanos Bibas, who is a professor of law and criminology and director of the Supreme Court Clinic at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Bibas.
This is a Federalist Society podcast. I'm Stefanos Bibas, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Bullcoming v. New Mexico, decided by the Supreme Court in late June, expands the reach of the Sixth Amendment's Confrontation Clause to require live testimony by a lab analyst with personal knowledge of lab tests in criminal trials. There are signs, however, that the Court's expansion of the Sixth Amendment is slowing down, and it remains to be seen how much the ruling will disrupt forensic evidence in criminal trials. In this case, Donald Bullcoming rear-ended a pickup truck. He smelled of alcohol, had bloodshot eyes, and failed field sobriety tests, so police arrested him for driving under the influence of alcohol and drew a blood sample. Then the New Mexico Scientific Laboratory Division performed a blood alcohol analysis. Analyst Curtis Kaler put the sample into a gas chromatograph machine, which returned a reading of 0.21 grams per deciliter. Kaler then filled out a certificate. He recorded the blood alcohol content reading, affirmed that the seal was intact, the statements were correct, and they had followed standard procedures, and his supervisor certified on the form that Kaler was qualified and had followed established procedures for handling the samples. At Bullcoming's jury trial, the state of New Mexico announced that it wouldn't be calling Kaler as a witness. He had recently been put on unpaid leave, and no one has ever revealed the reason why he was put on leave. Instead, the state called as a witness another analyst, Gerasimos Rosados. Rosados had neither observed nor reviewed Kaler's analysis of the blood sample. During Rosados' testimony, the state introduced Kaler's certificate as a business record, and the defense objected, claiming that introducing Kaler's finding without having him testify violated the Sixth Amendment right to confront the adverse witnesses. Nevertheless, the trial court admitted the evidence, the jury convicted Bullcoming, and the New Mexico appellate courts affirmed. By a 5-4 vote, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed on June 23rd. Justice Ginsburg wrote the majority opinion, joined in full by Justice Scalia, and in most of it by Justices Thomas, Kagan, and Sotomayor. Justice Sotomayor filed a controlling concurrence. Justice Kennedy dissented, joined by Chief Justices Roberts and Justice Breyer and Alito. Justice Ginsburg's majority opinion treated this case as a straightforward application of Crawford v. Washington, which had interpreted the Sixth Amendment's Confrontation Clause to exclude even reliable testimonial hearsay from criminal trials, unless the witness who made the statement is called to testify, subject to cross-examination. The Melendez-Diaz case had extended Crawford to forensic laboratory reports, and Justice Ginsburg applied Melendez-Diaz to this case, noting there was no evidence that the analyst here was unavailable. The majority rejected the argument that the analyst was merely a scrivener transcribing the results of the gas chromatograph machine, because the analyst had also certified that the sample seal was intact, that he had performed the particular test according to standard procedures, and that there were no factors that affected the validity of the result. The analyst's credibility was involved in all of those certifications, just as it is when a fact witness testifies that the traffic light was green. Rosados' surrogate testimony was no substitute for Kaler's. He couldn't show what Kaler knew, and the defense couldn't cross-examine him on lapses or lies that Kaler might have made. They couldn't cross-examine him about why Kaler had been put on unpaid leave, because he didn't know, and there was no evidence that Kaler was unavailable to testify. Rosados himself had no independent opinion or any personal knowledge of the tests or events. He hadn't supervised or been involved in any way in the test. The majority also rejected the argument that blood analysis reports are non-testimonial, following the Melendez-Diaz case. They noted that the certificates were affirmations made to prove particular facts in a criminal proceeding, and even though they were unsworn, they were sufficiently formal reports designed to be admitted into evidence. Lastly, in a portion of the majority opinion joined only by Justice Scalia, Justice Ginsburg pointed out that there are other ways to handle an analyst's unavailability. Blood samples can be preserved and retested. Notice and demand procedures can make hearsay admissible unless the defendants exercise their right to demand that the analyst testify. Few cases, in fact, wind up going to trial and requiring live testimony. Most of them plea bargain. And lastly, states that require live testimony have managed to accommodate analyst schedules. The fifth vote was provided by Justice Sotomayor, so her concurrence winds up being controlling here. It shows the narrowness of the majority opinion and may thus reflect her prosecutorial experience. Her concurrence explicitly leaves open four issues for future cases to decide. First, Bullcombing was not a case where there might have been an alternative purpose, especially an alternative primary purpose, for creating the report beyond its use at trial. Secondly, Bullcombing was not a case where the witness was a supervisor, reviewer, or someone else with secondary personal knowledge of the particular test. Third, this was not a case in which an expert witness was asked for his independent opinion about underlying testimonial reports that were not themselves admitted into evidence. That is allowed currently by Federal Rule of Evidence 703, and the Supreme Court is going to take up that issue next term in Williams versus Illinois. Fourth, this was not a case in which the state introduced only machine-generated results, such as a printout. It's not just raw data. Four justices, led by Justice Anthony Kennedy, dissented. The dissent reflects the continued opposition of four members of the court to much of the court's post-Crawford expansive reading of the Confrontation Clause. The dissent's main concerns are practical, common-sense ones. As Justice Kennedy pointed out, often several or even dozens of analysts may be involved in a scientific test. A machine does the work, often without any humans around. Moreover, to the extent there is anything human to say about it, cross-examination of Rosados, who worked at the lab and knew its protocols, sufficed, they argued. The jury, the dissent argued, can weigh the omissions and absences from evidence for itself and decide whom to credit. It seemed perverse to have more stringent rules for more formal, reliable documents, such as a certificate here, than for offhand remarks that might not be deemed testimonial. Finally, the dissent argued that the court's wooden formalism in this area has grown unworkable and burdensome. The implications of the Bullcombing decision are severalfold. First, it showcases a continued divide on the court between the formalists and the pragmatists. Justices Scalia and Thomas, who are often thought to be the most conservative justices, joined their most liberal brethren to rule in favor of a criminal defendant. Conversely, Justice Breyer joined conservative justices to rule for the prosecution. Justice Sotomayor, who's otherwise on the liberal end of the spectrum, telegraphed that she may well be swayed by some practical concerns to find a middle ground. Thus, methodology, not ideology, explains the outcome here. Second, Bullcombing showcases the continued power of originalism on the court, which gave birth to Crawford, even as originalist precedents get extended into domains that didn't exist in the 18th century, such as forensic machine testing. Third, The case raises, but it leaves open, whether testifying expert witnesses will have to change the materials on which they routinely rely under Rule of Evidence 703. The court's going to weigh in on that next term in Williams. That could portend a major shift in the way that experts wind up presenting any opinions. Fourth, Willcoming highlights the importance of our oral adversarial tradition and the extent to which the court will block efforts to use hearsay designed for trial, even to cover routine facts. Though the court continues to suggest that it won't require a full chain of custody, allowing such issues to go to a jury to decide their weight rather than admissibility, the thrust of these decisions does threaten standard practices involving forensic and other expert witnesses. Finally, there's the issue of plea bargaining. The result will likely be an additional plea bargaining chip for the defense in cases where a lab analyst might otherwise have to testify. Thank you for listening to this Federal Society Supreme Court podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.